When looking for the King of Podcasts, you're at the wrong channel.
Well, excuse me!
Looking for good ideas for life? You're far from good hands.
Hey, bud, what's your problem?
If you think the listener is always right, you're far from the right place.
Out of order! Even in the future, nothing works!
Hosted by a Northeasterner by birth, but a rebel by choice.
Are you threatening me?
If you want a host that floats between love and madness,
and we know the night is always gonna be here anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite, looking forward to a little afternoon delight.
Then play on and listen to Crazy Train Radio.
All right, guys, listen to this blues riff and B. Watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?
Warning, creators of this game do understand the subject matter may be offensive to some, but they do honor the families and people that have been affected by these real life tragedies that these individuals have caused. Want to play a game?
Oh yeah!
Lover of true crime?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, we got an interesting game for you to check out.
Wow.
With the mashup of influences such as horror movies, collecting cards, and RPGs.
What?
Led to giving birth to an incredible creation of this game, Killers the Card Game.
You are all my children now.
This game is a collectible trading card game featuring some of the most infamous killers with tidbits of trivia on the back of each card to help you learn some insight to each criminal.
Who the hell are you?
Let's not forget, during the game, cops will be chasing you and these criminals.
I'm a cop, you idiot!
However, check out their website listed through all social media today, which can be found under Killers the Card Game.
Am I on the internet?
I want to play a game.
Hi, I'm Phil Falcone, producer of Terrifier, Terrifier 2, and Terrifier 3. Please listen to Crazy Train Radio. It's amazing, amazing man here.
I'm George Stuber, cinematographer for Terrifier, Terrifier 2, and Terrifier 3. You're listening to Crazy Train Radio.
Hey folks, it's your least favorite host in the podcast world, Croc. Jonathan Steele. Boy, do we have a good one for you today.
So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this next guest you're very familiar with within our circle, but he's also a part of a little bit bigger circle that everybody's been clamoring for, and that be the Terrifier series, and particularly Terrifier 3. But this next guest is certainly born and bred from the Northeast, being from... He is the producer of the franchise, Mr. Philip Falcone. Phil, how are you? And we actually have a little sidekick joining us as I do the introduction that Phil decided to surprise us with last night, and Mr. George Stuber. George, how are you as well?
How you doing? I'm just trying to get my video to come on here.
But as he does that, Phil, how are you, sir?
I'm good. There he is.
All right.
Man. George, how you doing, man?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I need caffeine, but glad everybody is well. But we'll start there with the new project, part three for the Terrifier series. How do you guys, obviously there's excitement. There's recent release last week for the release date. It's been bumped up 2 weeks. But how are we feeling about the project as we sit here on May 6th?
Phil, you want to go first?
It doesn't matter. All right. I'm excited about it. I could tell you that it's got a really good facelift. It really looks good. The quality is there. The production value is there. Everything is there. It's much bigger than anything we've done before. And I'm going to say everybody that worked on this project gave it their all, and it looks it.
I'm going to agree with Phil. This is bigger, badder. We had an amazing crew, really top-notch people who did give it their all. And I think everyone's going to be very happy with it.
Now, obviously, I know Phil is key with independent projects and has been involved with the series from jump. And there's no major motion picture company behind this. Though I heard, and we know everything online is true, some tried to come in and make offers to purchase the property and such. But yeah, so with that being said, there's a certain level, obviously you want to step up your game with, because obviously there were, one was good, then you stepped up the game with two, with certain things, with kills and all that fun stuff. You guys obviously had more money to work with, so you wanted to step up the game. Now three, obviously there's an excitement. We want to step up the game again. So do you think we'll be able to hit fans' expectations? But what kind of expectations did you guys have when it's time to sit and go, all right, we need to write a script. We need to do this. The ball gets rolling.
Well, you had the script is Damien, of course. Yeah. It's his baby. First of all, just let me correct you. I wasn't with Terrifier from the jump. George was. He's been there since All Hallows Eve and before, I believe. Him and Damien started this thing. It hit a roadblock, I guess. Nobody believed in Damien. I don't know that I did either, but I loved them, so we went with it. But so I've been with Terrifier since original Terrifier and Terrifier 2, but George was with them for All Hallows Eve, which was a short, and they combined three shorts and made a production out of it. When you talk about the film Terrifier, the first one being good, the second one being better, bigger and better, Terrifier 3 is, to me, going to be bigger than the other two combined. I think it's tough to top two of the kills from one and two. It's you have two iconic kills in those films for practical effects, and then you go to Terrifier 3, and I believe we did a lot more in Terrifier 3. It's up to the fans to decide if there's iconic kills. I could tell you it's an insane movie though. George, you want to take that one?
Yeah. I don't think the fans will be disappointed at all. The kills are definitely there. They're pretty wild, too. So we're definitely not disappointing in that department. Three is definitely going to hit pretty hard.
Well, speaking of kills, and I don't want a spoiler, but during production, obviously, everybody was commenting online at how things were going and such. And I know David a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and say we're best friends and like other people say, not the case. But he made a comment on a post saying that there was a kill or something being worked on that actually almost made him sick. So was that kill as, I guess I'll say, gnarly as he made it seem like?
First off, Dave's fired for opening his mouth like that. That's one.
You're fired!
Two is...
Yeah, fuck him, you're done.
That he's out. There's nothing to give away here. There's so many different areas where people got a little grossed out. So like I said, this is bigger. It's crazier. The production value is a lot larger. There's going to be, I think if they threw up in two, there'll be more throw up in three.
Oh, that's nasty.
You know, things like that are going to come if you're ready. Now, as far as going back to what you originally stated, as far as staying indie, yes, indie is big for us. Staying away from unions is big for us. Unions cost money that don't get seen on the screen. It does not add to the production value. It actually takes away. After the release, I'll get more into it with this, but we did stay away from studios. Studios come in and they want to do their cookie cutter routine. They want to impose, you know, restrictions. We wanted to stay away from that. They came in, they were offering us decent money, but there was going to be a power struggle at each step of the way. And we decided that wasn't going to happen. So we went independent once again. It's the main people once again. That's all I could say.
I mean, that's how we started with one and then two. So, I mean, we're staying very consistent in regards to that. And also about that kill that you're referring to, gnarly is a good word to describe it.
Yeah. And George, obviously you have been a DP with Damien for a while. And I was just thinking about this when I was saying gnarly and stuff. But I used to watch the show Jackass from time to time. Mm-hmm. And this is what crossed my mind. Because there was, whether it be in the movies or on a TV show and stuff, they would like to mess with, the Jackass crew would like to mess with their camera guys and stuff that may have had weak stomachs and stuff. Right. So even though you've seen the script and you're involved, you know, production wise and all, did they try to do stuff like that with you guys to mess with you?
No, there is nothing. It's nothing like that. It's actually like quite the opposite. I mean, we're really tight. Our crew is really tight, and we have a pretty good working relationship, but yeah, there was really none of that going on.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking, because yeah. And it was obviously they would show them fucking with the crew, you know. So
right, we do. There's, yeah, there's not much time. There's not much time to mess around on these things. It's a lot of work. So
we do our screwing around after filming.
Yeah,
but when we go out for a couple of drinks or for dinner. There's a lot of screwing around. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of camaraderie. Like you said, it's a tight crew. It's like family for the most part. I'm going to say the original core is always going to be there unless they decide to leave. But as far as pranks on the set, not really. Just stupid little, you know, silly stuff just to get a chuckle here and there.
Well, obviously, and this is good and bad for obvious reasons, but during the production of part two, we had this little thing called a pandemic and COVID. And I'm not making light of it, folks, but I'm just setting the table here where you had a little bit of time and that story has been told to take a little bit of a time out per se to work on effects and improve things and such and rearrange to make the product better for part two. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise. Obviously, part three, it's, I guess you would say it's back to a normal schedule in terms of, okay, we got, let's say 6 weeks to do filming. We got X amount of time to do the editing, you know, like the timetable is a lot more tight again to be able to make the release date. So how much pressure is felt there that you're back onto a quote unquote normal timetable to make sure we hit our release date of October 11th and stuff like that?
Well, this time around, you know, Damien does his own editing. We did hire a lot of outsourcing this time, even between the special effects, colorization, sound. We have a lot more people on board this time around, but the time constraints are serious. And based on contractual obligations, very tough. Up until now, we've always had whatever time we needed because we didn't have any contracts in place. We did everything after. This time around, we decided to sign on because we had a good relationship with Cineverse, and we stayed with them. But by doing that, we end up in a contractual situation where we have deadlines, and we got off to a little bit of a slow start, which hurt us as far as getting certain obligations. Where we thought we had more time, we have less time now. It'll all get done. And it's just a lot more pressure this time around than at any other time from one end to.
How about from the production side, George, when you're...
So the manpower, the thing is, our manpower is totally increased. So stuff that would take us hours to do, like say lighting a scene, for instance, might take us an hour. So we save a lot of time that way because we have a lot of people. Also, this is the fastest I think we've ever completed anything so far. And the pressure is definitely there. But we have the right crew, and that was imperative to get this done.
Well, what is that like with bringing on, and it's like you said, in a lot of ways, it's a good thing in bringing in more people to help and, you know, the right professionals, because I don't know what the numbers were for part one, but I know I heard Phil on another interview I was listening to last night prepping, because I was at the time I was thinking it was just going to be Phil, but he mentioned it was there was a core of nine people involved with part two, and George, I'm assuming you were one of those nine. But now it's three that, like you guys have said, the crew has expanded to, which is good and bad. So what's that like for you guys, because you've been around both from part one? I'll correct myself from earlier. Yeah, you're bringing in these extra sets of hands to be involved, but how loyal? I'm not sure if it's not loyal because it's everybody's earning a paycheck, but it's, you know,
It was
the
tough
common because, vision,
right? Yeah, no, it was tough because, like you said, the first one we really didn't have anyone. It was really myself. I'd have someone show up to help me light, and then sometimes they wouldn't. So I mean, it was a very small crew on the first one. The second one is when we really developed the relationship. I had two other guys helping me with lighting. I had someone else helping with camera. So I had a few more people, but still very, very small. So this project currently, part three, there's a lot of trust. Like, we had to put faith out there too as well, because I actually had never worked with the lighting team. They're called like the Genie team. So bringing them on was pretty difficult. And we actually had someone else in place. They helped us with the teaser. And at the end, they wound up not being able to do it. And they had recommended pretty much the person that trained him. And these people have been doing this for a long time. And they weren't local either. There's a lot of difficulties with locations and stuff like that. So we had to have them come down here out of state. And it was, that was kind of tough too. So we had to put a lot of faith in them. And like Phil could tell you, in the beginning, there was some friction. It was tough because everyone's like knowing, you know, how everyone works together on set and who's who. But once we started moving, we became very cohesive as a unit, and it was magical, actually. Like, it was amazing. So this crew turned out to be excellent. And so, like I said, stuff that would take us hours and hours to do is now, you know, not there anymore. Now it's like an hour to do something that would take 3 hours or 4 hours. And they're very, the head guy, I mean, I had, let's see, seven guys, just on lighting alone, basically. And the head guy, he's known as a gaffer, would give out commands, and his key grip would, you know, it's like a chain of command, basically. The key grip would give orders to his guys, basically. And it was really like clockwork, and they worked very, very well together. So we kind of lucked out. We were fortunate in that way.
Might I add that, you know, George didn't want them originally, and I forced him to keep them on. When I heard they were out of state and all this crap, I said, get rid of them. Get rid of them all. But turned out I was wrong, and it was the best thing. We kept them because this crew was amazing. I wanted to get rid of them up until the first week or the first few days, and then I said, okay, they're staying. They're great. They're unbelievable. And the team was really, like you said, very cohesive, and they started to blend in with us immediately. So
yeah,
move. George brought that together, that's for sure.
I'm happy you didn't get rid of them.
Oh my.
Oh geez. Well, Phil, you know, obviously Phil Falcone, I know you are a very hands-on guy, and obviously when people say producing, most assume that's just dealing with raising the money and things like that. But obviously, besides being a hands-on guy, what actually goes into producing projects like this? Because it's obviously, I know with two and now with three, I would assume there's a lot of tedious paperwork that you're trying to get everything checked off for. So what actually goes into making these projects work?
Oh, again, I'm not your typical producer. I really don't know what a producer actually does on a real film. I only know what I do. I'm not one to sit back and just watch. I'm not in the greatest shape I was for one or two, but I hung in there the best I could. This time I had to relinquish, which was the hardest thing for me, relinquish a lot of the duties that I had on one and two. I still got to play around on certain things, building sets here and there, playing with this man, Bill Diamond, who's amazing. I got to do a couple of things with him, which was fun. Did very little on the special effects end. it's very, very hard when it comes to the back office paperwork. You know, this time I actually had a bunch of people, and I'd be honest with you, I liked it better when I handled it by myself. It was just smoother, but they were also much smaller productions. This one was a lot larger, so certain people came in and did an excellent job filling in where I could take some time away and get on set. If I didn't have them, I would never been on set the entire shoot. So that took a lot off my plate. It's hard for me to give up all these things. I like to have control. I like to, like you say, be hands-on. I've learned a lot on this shoot, and it's going to prepare me much better for the next one, whether it be bigger or smaller production. I'll have a better handle on what I'm supposed to do, what I can do, and what I could gladly give up. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. And Phil's aware, it's not for me to say here that, you know, he's been involved in helping us out here. And it's just like, I'm the same way. It's like, I have to have my hands involved with every aspect. But it's learning that process of learning to trust certain people. Not that I didn't trust them, but it's like, I had to learn to let go in certain aspects. Like, you know what? Do what you do. I trust you in this aspect. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's merchandising or this or whatever the case is, let the people know what they do, what they know, if that makes sense. So I totally get with what you're saying. But did you guys, and I'd be curious with what George has to say with this as a DP and such, But with the special effects, obviously Phil was involved heavy one and two, but he just mentioned he had to step back and such. But would you say things are practical, but also how much would you say is going to have to be CGI? And how does that work from a production standpoint on George's end?
They're pretty much, like, we stay true, the practical. So effects are tough to shoot, though. Practical effects are very tough to shoot. They don't get a lot enough time in the day because they don't really go exactly how you want them to go on the first try. That almost never happens. And the resets take a long time as well. So when you're working with effects, it's kind of tricky. But, I mean, we're practical probably 95% of the way. Right, Phil?
Yeah, I would say on one and two, if we did 1% of CGI, it was a lot. On three, I'm going to say there's probably about 5%. If it's more than that, it's slightly more. I don't think it'll be more than that.
Right.
And it's only because of time factor. Like I said, we were under lots of time constraints this time around. We got hit with some SAG bullshit that hurt us. And they say they're for their members, but it seems like they're only for their members if it's a major motion picture studio. But for indies, it seems like we're under a little bit of an attack. So it was a little tougher. They came down harder on us, and we fought through it. We did everything we had to do. We did everything they asked of us, and they just kept throwing shit at us, and we just kept doing what we had to do to make them happy and to do the best we could for our cast and crew. But like he's saying, the CGI aspect, it's going to be a little bit more involved in this. Nothing major. All our effects are still practical. There'll be little adjustments here and there with CGI.
Right on. Now, obviously, being an indie project, it's maybe like a major indie at this point, but I'm curious to know, because obviously it's a big deal to be in theaters for another sequel, because I was saying before, and Phil popped on for when we did a virtual watch party of part two last Halloween-ish, give or take, but I don't think there was a major, truly independent film to be in the theaters, horror-wise, besides Hatchet 2 up until that point. So what is that? Then obviously with part two for Terrifier, things seem to, oh, people are getting sick, this and that. Yeah, you know, a lot of the PR, natural PR. So what's that been like for being an independent film coming back 2 years later or 2.5 years later with part three?
You want to take that, Phil?
Sure, why not? Listen, you know, the fans wanted this, and that's the only reason why it's happening. As long as the fans want it, it'll probably end up in theaters all the time. Like if three comes out and they love it, they'll want it in theaters again for four. So as long as the fans stay there, parked in the seats at the theaters will want us there. It's always about the fans. It's got to be, because if the fans don't love it, you're not doing it. So as long as they like what we bring to the table, and there should be no reason why three is any different from two, it'll happen. And the theaters love it, because here's an independent film that comes through, gives other independent films a chance at theatrical releases. And let's face it, the theaters are hurting a little bit. They're not making the money they used to make. So, you know, anything that comes along out of mainstream and pulls in some decent money, theaters are happy.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I heard you mention on a different conversation, Phil, about being selective as far as when you're, as a theater, bringing in
an
independent project.
I know where you're going with that. I still agree with that. I don't think theaters should just take any independent film because it does hurt. I don't want to mention some names, but right after we went out of the theaters, they brought in a couple of independent films that were really weak in production value, and they made money, but it was a disappointment because they didn't make a lot of money. You're talking about $1 or $2 million, which is a lot of money, but not when you're talking about theatrical release. So you have $1 or $2 million made on a movie, but that's a lot of times because people thought it was going to be like another Terrifier, where you go and you get this really solid movie, and they were really not solid movies. But they were, even the theaters were trying to cash in on the fact that an independent film did well. But if they use that same thing that they did with Terrifier and say, well, this is solidly done, the production value's there, the movie is there, let's put it in. If they use criteria instead of just saying let's do this as a money grab, you know, parodies is a money grab for the most part. You take a production that has a value and then you make a parody of it, so people are going to go see it because they want to see it because it was already a profitable film. So if the theater keeps doing that, people are going to get disappointed and shy away. But if you use the criteria of production value, you know, movie, story, creativity, if it's gore, what type of gore, if it's CGI and it's done well, great. If it's practical and it's done well, great. But if it's done weekly and you put it in the theaters, theatergoers are going to get, you get tainted. But as long as they do it right, the theater should welcome it.
Well, I'm a guy that is big into physical media, and I always catch grief for it, but tough shit. I'll take that bullet. But for you guys, what is it like for you, especially with the Terrifier franchise, in terms of DVDs, Blu-rays, and digital or VODs? How important is the having different avenues to make money for the franchise? But which do you think seems to have the biggest box office per se? Is it the physical media, or would you say it's digital media for you guys? Do you see?
Listen, I like theatrical. The theatrical release is the biggest because you're going out. It's a night out. You're not confined to your living room. Then you have, you know, different types. Like I also like to stream some things. So your streaming service is good. I think all these outlets are good because it gives the fan base any chance they have to see it. It gives them the opportunity. Now I'm also a collector of things, as I see you are. So,
And this is only just a very small tidbit of what I have.
I'm sure. I got the same thing. So, you know, to me, a DVD or a Blu-ray, basically what that is, because I don't believe many people actually use their DVDs or Blu-rays much anymore. He's going to prove me wrong here. But most people use it as a collection at this point.
I get it.
Listen, I still have VHS. I have all kinds of stuff. Right, exactly. So it's a collector's. To me, that's more of a collector's item than actual people going out and putting that thing in their DVD player and watching it. I think it's more like, let me get a physical copy, get it over to David and Damien and Lauren and Elliot and have them sign it. You should make Phil Falcone and George sign them too, just so you know. But
when I see you guys, absolutely.
But I'm joking. To me, that's a collector's deal. Whereas streaming is a form of income, but it also gives an opportunity to people that don't get to the theater. They have the opportunity to watch it in their house. And like I'll always say, it's better to watch it on a big screen than a TV screen. But a TV screen, if you can't get to a big screen, God bless.
Yeah. And obviously, I was joking with Phil earlier about de-handling merchandising, but I got pretty good little tidbit you guys were giving away for part two over there with the 11x17 and such.
Okay.
So that, you know, I had to change things up because it's like, I can't have your baseball Hall of Fame picture next to Terrifier 3. I was catching all kinds of shit for that. Why not?
Terrifier 4, I think Dave plays for the Mets.
There's no crying in baseball.
So.
Yeah, well, we won't. Well,
He might as well have the other job because we said a few minutes ago he's fired. So what the fuck?
That's no. It. Can't be.
Yeah, I don't know how is it. I don't know how the baseball training was in Alabama, but no. So obviously, what's next, guys? With the where are we at with the process? Is it still in the editing? Where we? What's
it's in post.
What's next? Yeah,
it's in post production, handling on many different levels at the same time. So, you know, I don't know, George. What are you doing?
There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot to the post process. You know, once an edit is locked in, then you talk about color, sound, mixing. So there's a lot of like finishing and polishing that needs to be done once it's locked, picture locked. So that's like, yeah, it's a lot of work. We also, there's some pickup shots too, here and there.
Now, how much of a say do you guys have in a final edit, or is that all Damien?
That's all Damien.
That's all Damien. I mean, obviously he bounces it around and we look at it, but it's definitely all Damien.
He's
got very hands-on with the editing.
He's got total creative control.
It's always been like that. He's always, you know, it's hard to let someone else edit your project.
Yeah.
So
boys, I know the excitement is there.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, giggity, 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 goo.
For part three. And I know I'm actually, which is rare, I don't get super excited for things. I'm usually curious to see how things go, but this one I'm actually pretty excited to see. Well, I think there might be a few other reasons why you might be excited there, Phil, but we won't.
No, that's the reason. I want to see it all together. You know, when you're filming it, you see it in pieces. When it's over, you get to see the finished product. So
the pieces are looking great.
Yeah,
so far.
It's passion for everybody involved. So we become the fans just like the fans are the fans. We, you know, once we're done with our jobs, getting it to the screen, we get to sit back and enjoy it like you guys do, or not enjoy it like you guys do. So we're going to go there and we're going to look. And if it looks great and it feels right and it's, you know, how we did it, we'll be proud. It so far, everything we've seen looks really, really good. So I'm excited. I can't wait for it to happen.
Absolutely. And I know I said this to Phil before, but it didn't work out scheduling wise. It definitely sounds like we will have to have a cocktail or two to celebrate the release of part three. So
sounds good, man. We got to see where we meet up.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But gentlemen, I don't want to take too much more of your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for having us.
Hey there, Friday fans. We know how much you enjoy the movies. Enjoy grabbing your Friday merchandise and interacting with the Friday family, whether it be at conventions or during our particular watch-alongs. Well, when you're looking to get yourself masks, why not check out our friends over at Camp Blood Customs out of New York State and order your specific custom mask from any of the films. All orders are made specifically. Your needs and wants are. Make sure you find Camp Blood Customs on Facebook, Instagram, and all over social media and order yours today.
Hey, boils and ghouls, David Howard Thornton, Art the Clown himself, and you're listening to Crazy Train Radio. Choo-choo!